This meeting is now being recorded.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So welcome everyone in the home stretch here. There's been a good deal of mail traffic just in the last half an hour, I think. I circulated an agenda, which is essentially going through each of the agreements one by one to finalize. I think we can focus on any outstanding comments that people feel need discussion. I know some folks sent some editorial things in the not too distant past, which up to your discretion of whether you raise them on the call or not. But I think we can focus on non-editorial comments that might need some discussion with the group, and then hopefully finalize everything. And then we'll talk about the solicitation note for public comment briefly, and the plan for that, and then a little bit about future work beyond the launch of the public comment and our future call schedule. Any bashes to the agenda or edits to the agenda? I see Ashok has a hand up, so go ahead, Ashok.
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to greet everybody. Good night from Mauritius. It's my first time joining you, so I'm very pleased and hoping for a fruitful discussion. That's all I wanted to say right now. Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome. Okay, if there's no other proposals on the agenda, then let's start with the community agreement. And I don't know, George, if you have any preface or any particular items you want to discuss, I can turn it over to you.
Thanks, Alyssa. No, I think this agreement has gotten to the point where there are just editorial nits and definitional cleanup that's going on. You know, there have been so many comments coming in from, so many directions. This motion stops. We'll need to do an exercise, which Greg has started in the community agreement of making sure the definitions are the same in all three agreements and so forth. But that, again, that's really just housekeeping work and nothing that we need to spend too much time on. On the community agreement, Greg sent around some comments at 8 minutes before the top of the hour, which should be in people's mailboxes. And they look fine to me. I mean, the one thing that we may want to discuss as a group, at least with the RIR people, Athena specifically, is this point that we discussed last time on our last call about referring to the NRO as being unanimous, collectively and unanimously, this group or just collectively. I personally don't have an opinion either way. We cover the unanimous aspect down, in section 6 of the agreement, so I'm not worried about that. It's a presentation issue as much as anything. I came out of the last call hearing a request from Athena to leave the words in, and since it's a description of her group, I deferred to that, but I'll let Greg speak about his view and his deletion of that, and maybe Athena can, Athena and Greg can resolve it.
Athena, go ahead if you want to respond.
Yes, thank you very much. Actually, last time at the call, we said we don't have a really strong opinion and we would be fine removing the unanimously part of it, so we don't really mind, especially because, as you said, the joint and severe liability of the NRO is described as 6.5. I have a question, though, on that point, because in 6.5, I saw Craig replaced the word severally to individually, and I was wondering what was the reason for this change. Thank you.
Go ahead, Greg.
Bye.
Thanks, it's Greg. The reason I made that change is that severally has a very specific particular meaning in legal English, and really has no relevant meaning outside of that's here. And severally, specifically refers to having an obligation that you must satisfy in its entirety, even if you also share that obligation with other entities. So if the RIRs owe $1 million to ICANN, and four of the RIRs say we have 2 cents each, if the fifth RIR has $10 million, they got to pony up $1 million, even though their liability technically should only be $200,000. So here in this last sentence, it's referring to a right rather than an obligation. And the immediate previous sentence makes it clear that the rights of the RIRs under these agreements can only be exercised together. So it seems to me that it may not, individually and severally, they may both be wrong, because the rights are not individual rights. They're only collective rights. But again, severally doesn't really refer to rights, but only to obligations. It's kind of an arcane or archaic use of the word, anyway. So, while joint and several has a, special meaning when it refers to liability, it really only, does when it refers to liability. So, sorry to get us into kind of legal weeds, but I didn't want there to be an implication that somehow there was a tension between the two sentences, and didn't want an implication that, the rights could be exercised individually or severally by the in full by each RIR.
Okay. So Avina in the chat says she's good with the change. So I think we are good on both the unanimously deletion and the severally change.
Yes, it will also warm the heart of a member of the CWG, who nonetheless believes that I rejected those changes. But no good details.
Did you have other issues to raise?
I think we've covered those, and so I will take down my hand.
Okay, and then we had the note from Russ as well that in the edits to encumbrance that you made, Greg, they used the word encumbrance. So I don't know if that warrants further discussion.
This is Josh.
Go ahead, Josh.
So two comments. One, I don't think the use of encumbrance, lowercase there, is fine, because it is referencing that without restating all the other particular descriptions above. So I don't have an objection to using it there in lowercase. And then for a technical, or just for, we got the name of PTI that came across. We've dropped it into the license agreement, but I wanted to let George and others know that it's being referred to as the Public Technical Identifiers, which is a California nonprofit public benefit corp.
Yes, thank you for flagging that, and we can put that in all of the places it needs to be now. George, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Josh. The name that needs to be made consists of all of the agreements, and so it has to be done. On the encumbrance point, I would leave the definition as it is, as Greg has changed it. It's appropriate. It's normal. And, you know, unlike a software program that would, you know, produce an error when we refer to the definition within the definition, that's not what's going on here. These definitions have a different function. They just collect multiple terms under one defined term, and so there's no error generated when you have a definition like this that refers to the same term. That's appropriate. I think 1.6, the way Greg has edited it, is the way that it should read across all of the agreements that use that term.
Okay. Any other points of discussion on the community agreement? I had one, which is the IANA name service description in Exhibit A is still a placeholder. Can someone from the name side give an update on that?
This is Greg. I can speak briefly to that. I've circulated a straw man definition, which I'll also paste into the chat in a minute. Basically just distilling or even just collapsing a similar definition in the naming functions agreement. That's been sent out for straw man for rapid review by the CWG. I had hoped that somebody else would, you know, leap into the fray, but clearly I'm the fray leaper. And so far I haven't seen any massive objections. So, you know, even if we put it in brackets, at least there'll be something to comment, and I wouldn't want – it's better than having people comment on a void, because then that allows people to start freestyling, and I don't think we want that.
Okay, so when do you expect that you will have sort of finalized text, well, not finalized, but, you know, good enough to put in the document? Is that later today, or that's something that will be discussed on the CWG call?
I would say I'll certainly provide it as a, you know, a placeholder. You know, during this call even, as I said, I'll paste it into the chat. I think that, you know, kind of saying that it meets the needs of the, you know, that doesn't cause any heartburn in the CWG, ideally we'll get enough comments on the list that I can supply it before our meeting, or that we can kind of put it in. And I've just pasted it into the chat as well. So, you know, frankly, if it goes in brackets, it could go in brackets right now, as far as I'm concerned. And then, you know, if somehow the CWG throws up all over it, we have to take it out before we circulate it for public comment, or we have to change it because somebody has a right idea, we can work from there. Thanks.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else to discuss on the community agreement? Go ahead, George.
I actually got back from the airport and turned on my computer a little bit before the call, which is now why I see why I got all of the emails from everybody, and it's before the call. Have we gone through everybody's comments on the community agreement? I mean, obviously, we've just talked about Greg, Russ's response on that. I'm assuming that it's time to create a clean version that's going to go out to the community, but you know, if there are other nits, I just haven't seen anything beyond Russ's one piece of feedback on Greg.
I mean, so Greg has raised, I think, on the call the one or two items that we thought needed any discussion. I think otherwise, you know, we can, since Greg's edits came in just before the call, we can, you know, give people an hour or let's say 2 hours after the end of the call, maybe something like that, to provide you with any further responses or feedback on the line edits. But they're really just, they're primarily editorial as far as I can tell. So, and also they reference other things that have been discussed in the past. So I would say that we're essentially done having the conversation about the community agreement unless you hear from, you know, unless anyone else sends comments to the list within 2 hours of the close of the call, then I think you can go ahead and make a clean version, and that will be the version that we'll use for public comment, and that will circulate to the CWG and the trust and everywhere else. Greg, go ahead.
Just for the sake of moving along, I would say the only other comment I made that was not a total cleanup change or just in instantiating somebody else's suggestion, like with the additional domain names, is in 3.2D, where I inserted a few words just to make it clear that the IETF Trust would terminate the license agreement kind of in conjunction with the termination by the operational community of the IANA operator. It probably goes without saying, but there's a tendency to say things that sometimes go without saying based on trust in legal agreements, because lawyers are all about mitigating risk. So in this case, I felt like it just needs that little additional clarity and linkage, so I put it there. I think that's the only other thing I would direct people's attention to, and even that is marginal and controversy at worst. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Maybe we should just give people a minute to look at 3.2D and see if anyone has questions or comments.
My insertion is the TAN words.
Okay. Assuming people have looked at this and seeing no hands, I think we can assume there are no objections to this change. Josh has raised in the chat the question about the subdomains. So if we take a look at the subdomains list, they are in this document in the final exhibit. No, exhibit C. So the spelled out Internet Assigned Numbers Authority suite of domains have been added to this list. And I know that Russ had sent a mail indicating, or somebody, Ted or Russ, sent a mail saying that those do indeed resolve to the IANA website. So, Sam, are you able to confirm that this is the appropriate list? Or Ted, I see Ted has his hand up. Go ahead, Ted.
So I think there are two related questions, one of which is the one Alan pointed out, that the list of domain names being transferred has to be consistent. The second issue is that the way the text is written at the moment, the licensee gets the right to create subdomains under those domain names only when they relate to the IANA service. And so there's a presumption that any subdomains that are currently already in existence to provide the IANA service remain in existence through this change. but then there would be a process for instantiating new ones. So presumably that would give the licensor the ability to say, t-shirts.iana.org doesn't seem to be in line with this. Please explain further. So we need a list of the subdomains that are in existence at the point in time in which the transfer occurs. And that was the point that I was making to George. And I don't think it's a big deal. I think Sam has already said that she would coordinate with Elise to get this list of subdomains. And then, like the list of the list of domains being transferred, it would just have to be consistent across all the documents.
Thanks, Ted. Go ahead, Sam.
I think Ted said it all. We do have the, as people have noted in the emails, we do have the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority top-level domains, and so we'll make sure that, and I know that we've added them to a couple of the agreements. I know we didn't add them to the community agreement because we didn't give that level of line editing over it. But, of course, we'd want all the exhibits to be the same on naming the intellectual property that's at issue here. And then we will coordinate with Elise's team to get a list of the subdomains that are already in use. And I think that makes sense for everyone to just have an understanding of what that is so we know what the baseline is.
Thank you. So my only question about this is that, for example, in the community agreement, Exhibit C is used, just one time in the text to explain that these are the domains that are included in the IPR. And so is it appropriate to say that the subdomains are also part of the IPR that is being transferred? I just have no idea if subdomains extend or if the notion of IPR extends to subdomains, or if we need a separate exhibit that, because this is useful information to know, is that these are all the existing subdomains as well. So I guess my question is, does it, for the way that these exhibits are used in the text in all of the agreements, are we talking about just adding the subdomains to the same exhibit, or are we talking about adding a separate exhibit? I do not know whose hands are new and old. Ted, are you coming back in on that question? No. Okay, Sam?
This is a new hand. So my take on it is that we don't need to identify the subdomains as separate intellectual property because the top-level domains are there. It might make sense to have a schedule of the subdomains that are in existence so that we do have the baseline documented somewhere. So as we produce that, we could identify that would be put in as an exhibit. I know that Josh put into the chat that it might be worth dropping a footnote that the schedules of IP are being verified or in process. So that shouldn't be a stopping point to going out for a comment tomorrow. So I think that the top-level domain issue and the identification of those as the property that's being transferred makes a lot of sense. And then how that's used includes the use of the creation of subdomains, the maintenance of the subdomains, and so we'll get a list of those separately.
Okay. Is there something actually preventing both of these lists from being finalized today? I mean, in theory, these are known, not hard to not hard to look up and generate. So I think it would be preferable if we can just include the appropriate lists in these documents when they go to public comment if we think we can get that done today.
Yeah, we know the list of the top-level domains. Those are actually reflected more appropriately, I believe, in the license agreement and in the assignment agreement. So we know those. I've already reached out to Elise and her team, and I'll see if there's anything we can do to get that generated today. We're running on many different levels here at ICANN this week for our August 12th report, so I'll see if we can get someone to pull that list today. Hopefully it won't take long.
Okay. George, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on which schedules go in which agreements. Unless somebody can think of a reason, I don't see a reason that the subdomain schedule needs to be in the community agreement. The assignment agreement, I think, is kind of the obvious place, since we're just listing all of the IP. It's a nice to have, not necessary, but, you know, sure, we can include it. It's in the license agreement, I think, where this question of the subdomains actually, you know, has some operational importance. And, you know, I'm not completely sure that we've figured out exactly how that's going to work yet. But maybe we should, you know, we should just put a marker in this. We know Sam will get us a schedule of all the subdomains. We'll stick it in the assignment agreement, possibly the license agreement. I think that we, you know, again, the question that made the subdomains important was what happens when ICANN ceases to be the service provider for a particular set of services. You know, how do we deal with the subdomains in that context? And I think if we move to the license agreement next, that's a topic that we should keep on the discussion list.
Okay. So Sam is already in progress with the subdomains, and George, I think the action is for you to ensure that the domains themselves are consistent across the three agreements. And that's what we need to do before we get to public comment. Any further discussion on this point or on the community anything else in the community agreement? Okay, then I think we can move on to the license agreement. Oh, I see that Yari has a hand. Go ahead, Yari.
Yes, hi. So I have one observation about 4.5, which is about no known claims. It's that there are no
right.
claims.
This is in the license agreement or the ICANN community agreement?
This is in the license agreement.
Okay.
Is it the assignment agreement that you were isn't that the assignment agreement?
Assignment. Are we not there yet? Sorry.
So next
week
we're going to do the license agreement. Yeah. Okay. So George, any high-level comments on this?
No, this, again, this is a version that we tried to reflect the feedback from the last call as well as, you know, a variety of other, pieces of feedback that we received. I know that Greg had sent around sort of at the start of this call some comments on the license agreement and, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at those yet, so, you know, I'm happy to cede the floor to Greg if he wants to walk us through anything that's something other than an editorial nit.
Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. This is Greg. Just briefly, most of the changes I made were actually one to put into practice the suggestion that Alan Barrett made and that I agree with, which is to refer to refer to the IANA services in general as the IANA services and to have a new definition for those that are covered by the license agreement. Since we already defined the relevant community, rather than the word designated, I chose the word relevant. So the relevant IANA services are those related to the relevant community. And then there are a number of places where IANA services needs to be changed to relevant IANA services, and I've marked those in the document. There are actually several other places where the term IANA services is used to refer to all three services, and I've left those untouched. So now that distinction, you know, is more clear, rather than, you know, having that term kind of do double duty as it did before. The only other thing I had really was a question in some of the new language in 2.3 about making commercially reasonable effort to ensure that all digital displays are changed. I'm not sure if that's referring to websites and apps, or is it referring to digital signage, or perhaps things done with the fingers. The term just didn't seem quite to fit how things are used. I'm assuming it means websites and apps. But if that could be clarified, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, so I can respond. Yes, this certainly 2.3 is just a shorthand for non-printed, you know, paper and cardboard signage, you know, that has to be changed. There's a shorter time window for changing digital displays of the trademarks, right? I mean, that's what displays refers to. But it's, yeah, perfectly fine to spell this out in a little bit more detail. That probably will help the reader.
And I don't know if that, you know, covers use in software and other things that are maybe administrative-facing or community-facing but not public-facing. I don't know all the places that IANA might be used, you know, as you say, in non-paper displays, and whether, you know, changing it, you know, might affect, you know, might be more complex than one might think. I just don't know. Thanks.
Yeah, certainly possible. And I would also, so if we're looking at 2.3, I'm looking at Greg's 2.3. You know, I had a comment also in 2.3, which is the this time period is still in brackets, and just in order to get it graphed out in a timely fashion, I left it bracketed. I think with Sam, we had gone back and forth a couple of times, sort of trying to hone in on how long this time period should be. And so I guess I would ask if the 45 days is okay. Can we take the brackets off at this point, or is it, as Greg has suggested, that maybe this is more complicated than we all think, so it's too short?
This is Sam. On that, and as we were exchanging documents for people on the call, this had initially had a 30-day window on it. ICANN had requested a 3-month window, and so now the request back is 45 days. I'll check with our team. You know, this is, we're not sure the extent of where we haven't done a full assessment of what it would take to have to actually go in and change this across the website. It could be very easy. It could take longer. And so I'll check to see if the 45 days works to see if we can remove the brackets on this before we go out. But that's the basis for the conversation for other people on the call.
Okay, great. Sorry, Greg, did you have anything else? Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, just to kind of wrap on that, I think, again, I think it's preferable that we can get these documents out without things in brackets if they don't need to be. So whatever we can do to make that not bracketed today, I think would be useful. Just because, as Greg said, it sort of invites people to spitball on what they, you know, think it belongs there instead, and that's not necessarily helpful if it's really about a, you know, what ICANN can bear operationally and what the other parties think is reasonable. So,
this is Greg, just briefly. I think based on the theory of regression toward the mean, maybe we could call it 60 days. That seems to be kind of where things would probably go next. And note that it's only commercially reasonable efforts. And then anything else, if I can uncover some, you know, glitch that makes even 60 days a problem, that can come up in the comment period.
I'm just having the recollection that the 45 days is a split the difference. I mean, you know, this is kind of a Zeno's paradox situation we're in, right? I mean, I thought we were at 60 and 30, and that's where the 45 came from. But maybe it's true that we were at 90. I honestly can't remember and go back through the drafts now. But rather than trying to split that in some way that without going back and looking at the previous record, can we just get Sam to do the inquiry that she suggested? And she comes back with 60. I think 60 is going to be fine if that's what she comes back with. But
okay, that sounds like a fine plan. Okay.
So there were other comments. This is true. There were other comments that I had in the license that were soliciting feedback and sign offs from people with some bracketed language. We could go through those or any other comments that people have.
Athena, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. It's actually rather for consistency purposes, a comment on Article 1.26, where the NRO is described. We have also there acting collectively and unanimously. We can also remove the and unanimously from this description. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is noted as an action item for George. Josh, go ahead. Josh, you may be muted. I can't hear you.
Sorry, if you go to section 6.3 at Romanet 2,
we have this individual scroll. So
right. So, but I'm just letting people know where I'm going. I thought this had come across, but perhaps it didn't. And Greg, I think you should confirm as well as Samantha. But I think that the language in Romanet 2 should read instead of saying licensor at the end of the clause, where it says licensor shall have the right to terminate, it should say licensor shall terminate.
Which section are you at again, Josh?
In the license agreement, section 6.3, termination for change of service provider.
Yeah, if the community had told them that there was a change, then that should be a shall. I'd agree
right.
with that.
Right, and the third party has been retained to take over the services.
Right.
It should just say licensor shall terminate instead of shall have the right to terminate.
There might have been some addition of the language, or that's existing language. The one thing that George and I were looking at, but I think that the language of the between the community agreement and this is fine, is making sure that we didn't require a termination of the license agreement before the next operator was up and running. But I think that they all work together.
Right. Well, that's what the first part of the clause says. Here, at least, that the operator is retained and is obligated to perform.
And we're fine with the taking that just to the shall terminate.
this is Greg. If I can comment, I think that that last sentence, as I see it, you know, says that licensor shall have the right to terminate the license in respect of the INN name services immediately upon written notice to licensee. But I don't think, again, I think the word immediately, this needs to be essentially harmonized with what's this in the community agreement. Not saying it needs to be identical, but it needs to be harmonized so that, you know, the termination will be a result of the termination and done in conjunction with the termination of this relevant services operator, you know, by the community. So I think the right to terminate is not correct, and the right to terminate immediately is really not correct, because then we could be left with a big problem. Thanks.
It is harmonized, because the language isn't identical in the two, because the community agreement actually relies on the language in section 6.3. And so if you change the language, if you have the language in 6.3 read that a third party has been retained and is contractually obligated to perform the services immediately following the termination of this agreement, licensor shall terminate the license in respect to the INN and name services upon written. I would take out the word immediately there as well and then say upon written notice to licensee. In the community agreement, I was looking back there, the community agreement specifies that the service arrangement, you know, has been or will be retained, will be terminated, and then the IANA Trust should thereafter terminate the associated license with the operator with respect to such services in accordance with the license agreement. And I think if you read that in conjunction with the license agreement, it makes it clear that that termination wouldn't happen until the third party has actually been retained. But once that happens, the trust doesn't have to go back and, you know, reconfirm the termination with the CCG. It just does it.
Right.
So I'm comfortable that the two are harmonized if we make that change in Romanet 2, and that the trust wouldn't act before that third party had been retained, but also would do so kind of automatically once that third party has been retained without reserving discretion.
So this is George. I agree with Josh. I do think that the clauses and the agreements work together. I also just wanted to say that I guess it's okay to eliminate the word immediately, but I think it's helpful to have there. Again, this is the license agreement between the trust and the licensee. It does not go to notice periods and discussion and so forth with the CWG. This means that when the notice is issued by the licensor, this agreement is automatically terminated without any notice period. There's not, you know, a 30-day period for notice and that sort of thing. It is an immediate termination of this agreement, which is only between the trust and the licensee. So, again, I think it's preferable to have immediately, just so there's not an argument later on that, oh, well, you know, there should have been some notice period, you know, before you have to stop. But I think even without it, that, you know.
What if we said effective upon notice?
Yeah, that would work. That would work.
Alan, go
ahead. Thank you. This is Alan. I think I'm okay with the immediate piece here, that the operating community can inform the trust that the IANA operator's contract has terminated and therefore the license should immediately terminate. And I don't see a provision for us to, for the operating community to inform the trust that the service provider will change at some future date. You know, so, for example, if we said it's now August, but in November we're going to change our IANA operator. Please terminate us in November. Is there a way for us to do that?
So I think that if this is Josh, if I may respond, I do think that there's alignment there. If you have to look at both the agreements, because the CCG or the co-chair, the representatives from the relevant community can tell the operator that can tell the trust that, as an example, okay, we've retained, we're replacing this person, we're going through transition services, and we've retained them to take over the services on, it's now August 15th, but they're going to take over the services on October 1st. And in that case, on October 1st, that service provider is not contractually obligated to perform the IANA name services until October 1st. And so this termination would become effective on September 30th or as of October 1st.
Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been looking at this and my thinking is evolving. I think what we really want to say is that it should be terminated or licensor shall terminate the license simultaneously with the effective date of the license with the new third party. That's not quite how I draft it, but I'm just speaking. It doesn't have to be immediate, but it could be immediate depending upon when the notice comes in, but it really... It should be neither later than or earlier than the new license agreement becoming effective. It should be simultaneous with that occurrence, and that's what I think we should reflect. Thank you.
But can I just ask a clarification on that? There's nothing in any of these agreements that presumes that there will necessarily be a new license agreement, correct?
I think it's presumed.
I thought that got, at least from this agreement, I thought that got taken out.
It's more than presumed. I mean, in the community agreement, it's dealt with at length. This agreement called for transit, but the community agreement has quite a bit about that.
I guess, Alyssa, maybe what you're saying is it's conceivable that a new operator could come in and not want to use the IANA domain or name.
Exactly.
It could be, Alyssa Cooper Services, ACS. And, so you're right. I think my change is necessary but not sufficient or doesn't, account for all possibilities. It doesn't account for that possibility. And if there's nothing for anything to be simultaneous with, then that it also causes the problem. So I agree with that observation.
Okay. Ted, go ahead.
Sorry,
George. Go ahead if you want to respond to that.
No, I did, but I don't want to cut in front of Ted if he does too.
Okay.
Just go ahead, George. I can leave.
All right. So I think I liked Greg's formulation. Because what we're talking about is termination of ICANN's right to use these marks being concurrent with the termination of the service arrangement where they provide the services. And I do think that those two sets of rights and obligations should terminate concurrently. I mean, it's a separate question than whether we grant a license to the IANA marks to the new service provider. But whether we do or not, it seems like ICANN or the current service provider ought to stop using the marks in connection with that kind of service if it goes off and wants to provide them to somebody else. Right? So two separate things, terminating services being provided here, and then second thing is st- starting up new services by somebody else. The new services piece doesn't need to be in this agreement and shouldn't be in this agreement that only focuses on the relationship with ICANN as it's performing those services. So I would wind us back to the suggestion that Greg made a little bit ago and talk about the termination having effect concurrently with the termination of the services agreement.
I agree with
thanks,
that.
George. I agree with that as well. Go ahead, Ted.
I certainly agree that terminating the use of a license or terminating the license at the same time as you terminate the service agreement makes all sorts of sense. But I wanted to point out that there may be a case in which a new service provider does not use the same marks as the current service provider, or might use a subset of the marks of the current service provider at the discretion of the operating community or with the agreement of the operating community. And I wanted to be careful that we're terminating the license even if the new service provider isn't taking up exactly the same set of marks or domains. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I think as long as the trigger for the termination of this license is only related to the termination of the services agreement, then we're fine. No, as long, you know, we're not
okay.
Projecting into the future about anything that happens afterward.
Okay, and that makes total sense to me. What I heard at one point, though, was that it's terminated concurrently with the grant of license to the new operator, and that's where my concern came in. If we're not using that formulation, I think we're fine.
Okay, good. Athena.
Yes, I agree with the suggestion of simultaneous termination, or at least a termination that follows the termination of the service agreement, so that we don't end up in a situation where we will have to wait for the termination of the license agreement, you know, based on restrictions and notice periods that we have set, and they are not in line with the transition to a new operator, at least. Thank you.
Thank you. Josh, go ahead.
So I put language in the chat. I said, should have said proposed revision, not requested. But I think that listening to this discussion, what I've suggested is that we make it the termination concurrent or effective upon written notice to licensee and engagement of the replacement IANA name service provider. That might not be the exact defined term because it's been changing, but the point being that there needs to be that new provider in place, but it doesn't need to be premised upon a license being granted under the IP or not to that provider, which is what Ted and some others that were making that point. So if you look at that language, I think that does address what people are trying to get at. And
well,
you know, comments are appreciated, or welcome, of course.
So this is George. It's worth having this discussion because we should nail this down, right? I mean, there are two possible ways or two possible time points, right, to have this license to the service provider terminated. Either when the service provider's service agreement is terminated or when a new service agreement is put in place. Now, in 99% of the cases, we would hope that those are the same point in time. But this agreement probably should just focus on the termination of the services by this service provider. You know, I understand why under the community agreement, which deals with how, you know, the communities are interacting with the trust and who's going to get the new set of rights, we can do all we want with the new service provider. But in the ICANN facing agreement or the agreement that, that deals with whoever the current service provider is, I think in looking at your proposed language in letter Z, Josh, rather than engagement to the replacement service provider, shouldn't it just be termination of the IANA services arrangement, you know, with the licensee, trusting that the service, that the community, right, will not, the community will know when to terminate the existing service agreement, right? The community, if they have some reason to terminate the existing service agreement before a new service provider is appointed, they should have the right to do that, and this agreement shouldn't interfere with that.
Alyssa, if I may respond.
Yeah, go ahead.
One way to say that, I think that the issue is that people are concerned about there being a gap in services that's mandated by a contractual clause or created by some contractual mandate. So maybe we could cut through this again by saying that it's the date, it's effective upon written notice to the licensee or upon written notice to the licensee and effective upon the date specified by the relevant community or something like that. So then we, you know, pursuant to the community agreement. So then we've left it to the community to tell the license, to tell the trust the date that they want the agreement to be terminated, and they'll do that.
I like that because it avoids baking too much process into this agreement and does defer to whatever the community decides in accordance with its processes.
Right, and it doesn't require the trust then to evaluate whether or not the party's been quote-unquote engaged or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So
would that work if we said effective upon notice to licensee, or sorry, shall terminate the license in respect to the IANA name services upon written notice to the licensee and effective upon the date specified by the relevant community pursuant to the community agreement? I can write that in the chat.
Yeah, so Russ's comment is going exactly where I put myself into the queue, because I think even throughout this conversation, we have not been clear about which part of 6.3 we're talking about. Josh is talking about the part that applies to names, but there's also this part that applies to protocol parameters and numbers. And so we need to clarify if we're talking about making any edits to both of those or only to one. I will admit that when I read this before the call, I sort of found it a little curious that the provision for names is so different from the ones for numbers and protocol parameters, but I just sort of figured there's something about the separation working group process that means that there's more of a concern than there otherwise would be. So I want to make sure that everybody's clear about the change that's being proposed here. I think the thing about that Josh proposed with the date would work fine for both. Let's see, he got it into the chat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Alyssa, can I address that concern?
Yep.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. I mean, we've been talking about the sort of the second iteration here of Little Roman 2, but those changes should be made in the Little Romanet 2 above also for numbers and protocols. The reason we have these split into two sections is not Little Number 2, but Little Number 1, where the names community doesn't have an agreement per se, right, with ICANN like the other two do. And so, you know, there are references to ICANN bylaws and so forth that need to be made that don't apply to the numbers and protocols people. So Little Number 1 is different between the two. Little Number 2 should pretty much be the same.
But it isn't. And that's
important. Well, it should be.
That's important.
No, it should be. We need to rationalize those and make them comparable.
Okay, but in that rationalization, I think, well, at least what I've gathered from this call is that it's important to actually remove the concept of the third party having been retained to perform the services, because that's not actually, we do not actually want that sort of requirement to be mixed in here with what the termination trigger is. And now we have a queue, so I will get out of it. Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. My comment at this point is that while I would theoretically like the number twos, the Romanets two, to be the same, we might get into a philosophical discussion of whether whether ICANN is authorized by the NAMES community to perform or oversee the performance of the IANN and NAMES services, as opposed to some other characterization of that relationship. It's obvious, it's much more clear since they're external bodies that that's true of protocol parameters and numbers. But to say that they're no longer authorized, you know, implies that the current relationship is one of authorization by the NAMES community. And I can just see that, you know, going into the weeds and down a rabbit hole if people want to think about that. Therefore, I think the construction about it just being simultaneous with then the question is there a service? Is there really a service contract? I mean, there's the naming functions agreement, but that's an internal agreement between ICANN and PTI. So I don't think we can actually say simultaneous with the termination of a service contract, although I think we do have a definition of that ties service contract to the naming functions agreement in the case of names. That's an internal agreement. It's not something that an external third party has the right to terminate. It's only ICANN and PTI, I guess, that would have the right to terminate that. Although I'd have to look more at what the SQIG can do. So, you know, there is a little bit of a drafting challenge here, given the unique nature of the setup that we currently have with names. I had hoped to shed more light than heat. I'm not sure I accomplished that. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Go ahead, Athena.
Yes, thank you. So I think this might be one of the provisions that we will have to have different texts for each community. So before we have opinion on that, we would like to see the final text and and express an opinion on that. So we might want to differentiate ourselves from what the NAMES community want there. Thank you.
Thank you, Athena. I am actually trying to sort of produce a clean and redlined version of this that I can share. Let me see if I can just do that really quickly. Can people see that?
Can you make your window bigger at all, Melissa?
Is that helpful to people, or is it, can you not see it properly?
Really?
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the problem is that I can't see the chat or the queue. So if somebody wants to run the chat or queue, or I can send this to somebody and they can be the presenter and I can run the chat or queue, I will need some a second pair of hands here. Maybe
we have
Yari.
Josh up.
Okay, or people we can sort of crowdsource it. I took Josh's text and put it into the two places where I think we're talking about putting it. I'm not sure if this captures all the changes that people thought we wanted to make, but I just put that up for discussion in case it helps. Let's see. Josh, go ahead.
Sorry, there's actually nobody putting their hands up. I think we're getting comments in the chat that are starting to come in, where people are saying that it looks good to them. So I think, yeah, that you captured this. The different communities do have different standards for when the termination is supposed to happen under 1 and 2, but everybody wanted alignment on what the trust does once it receives that instruction. So, and I think that's not clear.
I am not sure it's a great idea to reference the community agreement here in this way. I mean, this opens up in an agreement between the licensor and the licensee, you know, a whole line of argument about whether or not the community agreement was complied with, which is an agreement that licensee is not a party to. I don't know. I can't keep track of everything going on in the chat while I'm trying to read the forbidden stories. So I'm sorry I didn't see this, but I would prefer to go back to the formulations that we had before, where it shall terminate upon notice of the licensee and effective on the date specified by the relevant community. I'm not sure what happened to that formulation.
I don't think that that's an issue.
So if we just take out the part that references the community agreement.
Yeah, and period after rest.
That helps. Except we're taking out immediately, right? I mean, weren't we going to say?
Yeah, it's and effective upon the date.
Oh, whoops, I missed the immediately down here. I think I got it up on the other one. So again, I can't see the chat. Are there objections to this?
There's no objections in the chat.
You know, and just thinking about the mechanics of this now that we're trying to draft this collectively, I mean the written notice that the licensor provides should be the triggering point for the termination. I mean, as written now, it looks like there's a written notice that the licensor provides, and then the parties have to look to the relevant community to specify, you know, a date. Shouldn't the date be specified in the notice? You know, just we just want one notice of termination that. Otherwise, this thing is terminated as of this date, and the date that we put in there is going to be the date specified by the community.
Wait, Alyssa, don't change it yet.
Yeah, we can discuss. We can discuss.
Well,
we can have some reference.
Maybe we're close enough that
the lawyers can go fine-tune this and make it
specific, but that it's close enough that people feel comfortable. I didn't want to get too far into if there's other changes that people wanted to make, but if this is close enough, you guys can go off and finesse it. Does that seem reasonable?
I don't think there's any serious disagreement here among anyone. I think it's just a matter of getting the words right and making the process work, you know, as smoothly as possible.
Okay. Then I think that's what we should do. I'm going to attempt to stop sharing. Okay. So, do we want to, are there other items in the license agreement that we want to come back to?
Yes. Yes. We need to go to 6.6C in Charlie. Oh, this is, we scroll ourselves, I see. Yeah. Oh, this is one of you can't see comments in this, format, but in 6.6C there are a couple of comments from me, in this last sentence, and we just need to get kind of collective agreement on how this is going to work. So this is what happens on termination. And, you know, it's a question of the subdomains. So this is where the subdomains become important. Right now, you know, we've kind of glossed over the question of what happens to the subdomains, and we just say that on a termination, we're going to mutually agree on a reasonable approach to allow replacement provider of the services to operate under the subdomains at no additional charge. You know, two questions. First, is this sufficient? And does this give enough comfort to the communities that we don't need to say more? And second is the question that was raised by ICANN is, you know, is this at no additional charge fair? Or is this something that is going to cost money to do? And I can't answer that question, but I think the lawyers need feedback from the technical community here on these questions.
Sam, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Sam Eisner. I just wanted to clarify some of the ICANN questions on here. You'll see that there's been language added to the second part to allow for ICANN to continue using some of the marks if it's still under license for at least one of the communities so that ICANN doesn't have to remove everything just because of service to one community has been terminated. Now, this is an area where I think we, particularly on the coordination, this is one of those areas where I think having some more technical and not legal people in the mix could help us come up maybe with some better language here. You know, the charge that we were worried about is that, you know, there's one thing for ICANN to not charge. I mean, it might not, we could agree to help with the transition of the services over as necessary. But, you know, our question was, you know, we can't guarantee that other people wouldn't do it without charge. And so I'm not sure that that's something for ICANN to commit to, right? I mean, we could say that we wouldn't cost people or we wouldn't charge people to do what we're committed to do, but we can't control what would happen at other places. So we wanted to make sure that this was worded in a way that wouldn't require ICANN to expend money on behalf of someone else just because ICANN said in this agreement that there would be no additional charge to someone. I'm not sure what this means in here, so I don't know if it's a necessary provision or what.
So I can clarify what I meant in drafting it was the first piece, no additional charge by ICANN. But you're right, there may be charges by registrars, you know, to record transfers and so forth. Those may in fact be charges. I don't know who pays those charges, but we should be specific, I guess.
Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks. So on the charge for the domain name, actually, it's the trust that's bearing that cost, because registration of domain names is borne by the registrant, and the registrant is going to be the trust. The only thing that is actually a service here, if we're doing subdomains, is that somebody's got to put an entry in a zone file, which is something I'm pretty confident ICANN can do. So it doesn't seem like it would be a really big problem. And it could be that that the trust ends up having to put a parent domain somewhere and, you know, set up DNS services for it. But I'm also pretty confident that the IETF trust can arrange for domain name service entries without too much complication. So I don't actually think that there is a problem here that we're going to need to worry about. The more important question is whether it's okay to say, well, we're going to punt basically, and we'll work this out if we need to. Because that's really what the mutually agree upon reasonable approach to allow any replacement provider of IANA services to operate under one or more subdomains. What that really says is, in the event that you have one of these things, so somebody moves, say the protocol parameters moves, then, you know, protocol parameters moves as a separate DNS name than IANA.org. And we're not specifying here exactly how it's going to work or whatever. We're just saying that we'll sort it out later. Technically, this is a trivial problem. That's not a big deal. There's lots of different ways to do it, and we could work it out then. The big question is whether legal angle is, like, whether that's good enough for people, that we're saying, you know, we agree to work this out later. We don't say how we're going to do it. If you're okay with it, I am.
Thanks, Andrew. Go ahead, Alan.
Thanks. I think Andrew said just about everything I wanted to say. Technically, it's pretty easy. I don't expect subdomains to be visible at the registry or registrar level. That's something that the domain owner deals with, and whoever that is just has to put some records in a zone file. I'd be fine with moving references to at no additional charge, and just say we'll work it out later. We agree to negotiate in good faith on how to do this if it ever happens.
Thank you, Alan. Go ahead, Yari.
Thanks. Yeah, Andrew, again, he said most of the things that I was planning to say, but I'll just comment on this, you know, leaving the language a little vague here. We could try and fix that, but the downside of that is that then it will limit our options. Like, I don't know what kind of, like, you know, 10 years from now, there's a need to change something. Are we going to go to a different domain name? Are we going to go to a subdomain? Are we going to, you know, put it all in a BitTorrent? And, like, the whole question is irrelevant. So I think it's exactly right as it is right now. I don't think we need to change that. Thank you.
Thanks, Yari. George?
Yeah, thanks. I was just entering probably some of this into the chat. It's always better to say what the obligation is, right? The only reason to have one of these vague, we'll, you know, mutually cooperate in the future is if we just don't know what to say the obligation is. If we have idea of what should actually happen, we should do it, because down the road, you know, when you're in a termination situation, the parties are generally not that happy to cooperate with each other, right? Or there could be animosity, and, you know, leaving it to good faith and mutual cooperation is, you know, often just a very protracted process. Not saying it would happen here, but I've certainly seen it used to the detriment of the other party. And so if we can come up with something to say that's more specific than this, I would ask that we try to do that. It doesn't have to be extremely specific, but it, you know, something more than this, I think, would be helpful if possible.
Andrew, go ahead. Or Yari, are you back in the queue? Oh, okay, Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks. So this is actually, though, more specific than people seem to believe. What it says is that there is a reasonable approach that will allow any replacement provider of IANA services to operate under one or more subdomains of the IANA domain. So what that means is that the current provider is agreeing to create delegations inside IANA.org. That's what that says. And having created that delegation under there, you know, they can go and send it somewhere else. And that's not like that's how you say this. So there isn't actually more to say about that. And then once you created the delegation, the person who's running on the other side of the delegation can do whatever they want with there. So that's the way the DNS works. So I don't actually think that this is that this suffers from the lack of specificity that you worry about, George.
Okay, so out of this, should we take that the language is fine, except that the at no additional charge we should clarify that to say at no additional charge ICANN or by the licensor? I mean that I think was a legitimate point that can easily be clarified. Other than that, anything on this sentence?
Well, I thought the suggestion was just to delete the at no additional charge. Which would be fine.
There was that suggestion, but I think that it would be preferable not to delete it and just clarify that we're talking about no additional charge from the licensee, because that, I think, is I don't think anybody believes that the licensee should be able to charge for transition services.
Okay, so people want to add by the licensee at the end of the sentence. That's the only change. Sam, do you think that's workable? Add no additional charge by the licensee.
Right. I think it's fine.
Okay, good. Then I think we have concluded on 6.6c. Other items in the license?
Not for me.
Anybody else? Okay. Shall we move on to the – oh, we do have some hands. Josh, go ahead.
Just quickly, if the ICANN staff could forward to George the bracketed language for the description of the IANA name services with that change dropping the clause, just in case he missed that in the chats, so he's got that. Thank you.
So that was a request to pull something out of the chat and send it to George. I just want to clarify.
Yes.
I missed what I'm supposed to be getting.
Greg Shadden had sent a, the proposed definition of the IANA name services, and then not long after sent a clarification to that, dropping the clause at the end.
Oh, yeah. I've got that in email.
Maybe
that came.
You have it in
email.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Alan, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to confirm that the definitions for all three parts of the IANA service will appear in all three of the license agreements. I think that's the intent, but I wanted to clarify because an earlier version was different.
Well, actually, that's a good question. My assumption was that the three freestanding license agreements each would only include its piece of the definition. The protocol one would include the protocol services definition, but not the other two. But if there's a reason to include all three, then I guess we could, although I'm open to either possibility.
It's Alan again. We do have some text that refers to other IANA services, being services offered to different communities under licenses other than the license you're reading right now. So I think it's appropriate to have it all there.
Yeah, we'll have to do some, we'll have to label them in some other way in the exhibit. We can do that. We can do that. Do others feel that that's a good idea to describe all three services in each of the three license agreements?
I can agree that it is.
Looks like there's support for that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, anything else on the license agreement? Okay, let's move on to the assignment agreement. Okay, any overarching comments on this one, George or Sam?
Yeah, so we have some work to do to, just make some of these definitions consistent along the lines we discussed. So the definition of encumbrance, for example, will make consistent. We've got to add the subdomains schedule. But beyond that, I think the only open point on this agreement, and I'll let Sam, say if she feels differently, I think is what Yari had mentioned earlier, which is 4.5. We're just, anticipating a disclosure from ICANN at some point about the known claims that are out there. So I'll let Sam comment on that and anything else that she sees in the agreement.
Thanks. This is Sam. Just for disclosure to everyone, in talking with my counsel last week or earlier this week, they reminded us that we have done some cease and desist letters recently within the past 12 months regarding use of the IANA trademarks within some second-level domain registrations. And so we'll be coordinating with counsel to get that information over to the IETF Trust, hopefully within by early next week, so that they can start taking a look at that. And so we wanted to make sure we modified this agreement to reflect the fact that there had been some recent activity. So I don't think it reflects a major change to the agreement, but it just makes it better reflect the current status. And then the only other part, George, that I think we should flag is there is an area in here, Alyssa, that if you look at 6.1, there is a bracket, and I think we might actually need to go out to comment with a bracket, I haven't been able to identify within ICANN what we would believe the appropriate number of years here are for a future indemnification clause for similar usage of the IANA mark. So we do have agreement in principle that that's appropriate. We're really, I think, just down to a matter of a couple of years difference between the IETF Trust's initial position and where ICANN might be. So this is really just it is a legal matter between IETF Trust and ICANN on this. And so we'll be working to close this matter as quickly as possible, but I don't know that that I have the access to the people who actually have the authority to make this final decision today, but we would be comfortable with the agreement going out with this item in bracket, because it's really a very technical item between IETF Trust and ICANN.
I'll let others comment on that. Obviously, it's not a legal question. My assumption, and this is an assumption, I guess, for Alyssa and the others on process, is that our intention is to submit for public comment clean documents, no red lines, obviously, and no comment. So, right now in Section 4.5, I have a comment which is really intended to flag this for this group, that I can, has the disclosure to make under 4.5. I mean, I will delete that, and I don't see any particular reason to flag that for the public in the public review, but if there are any, and the language doesn't need any changes. The language, I think I understand from Sam, is okay as it is. We may get a question, since the language is accepted as disclosed to the IETF Trust by ICANN, question may be, well, has anything been disclosed? Number one, should we flag that? Number two, should we be answering that question? And I guess that's a question for Sam as well as the others on this call. How are we treating diligence disclosures in this process? Are they generally made public or not?
So just on the sort of the document formatting and the process point, I think what we should plan on is certainly clean documents, no comments, no red lines. But if we have areas where, we absolutely need bracketed text, then we include bracketed text, and we include a disclaimer at the top of the document that explains what it means for text to be in brackets. So that would be my suggestion. But I understand Sam's point about the indemnification timing to be in brackets, which is fine. The other question is more of a substantive question about the specific provision in 4.5, and I see that I have Yari in the queue. So go ahead, Yari.
Yeah, thanks. So, and thank you, Sam, for the information. The only thing that we wanted to raise this for was to make sure that we actually have the information well in advance of a signing and it's just effective date, and it sounds like that's forthcoming. So I think it's all good, and I fully agree that we should have a clean document, and I don't think there's any need to raise this particular issue there as comment or otherwise. If we get questions about stuff, we will get them and we'll try and answer. Also on the comment of bracketed text and cleaning up the document, if we must, then we shall use that. But I'm not actually sure if that's necessary. necessary in a case like the one that was brought up here, the number of years for indemnification. We could simply agree in this group that we realize that's one area of the document that's, you know, might have a comment or you know, feedback from one side or the other during the comment period, either from ourselves or outside, and then we'll change the number from, you know, something to something else. So I would actually almost suggest that we have a number there, no brackets, and then we just see if we need to change it during the process. Thank you.
So I agree that is preferable, but I think we need to hear from Sam whether any number can go in there and have that be acceptable to ICANN. I sort of interpreted her comments as saying that there's not a number that is authorized to be in there. But if we can put some number in there, I agree that is far preferable to a blank that we have to either put in brackets or otherwise explain.
I briefly follow up. I think there's a difference between acceptable in a draft that goes for public review and acceptable to be signed, right?
I agree, but I'm also not a lawyer, and I'm not going to, you know, represent what other people think the risks are here. So, George, go ahead.
I was just going to give this group a little more context around the discussions that we've had about the number. You know, this is a situation where, you know, there's no easy number to just pick that exists in the law or in statute of limitations or anything like that. So, you know, the number to some degree is arbitrary, but it also is just, you know, a question of how comfortable you are, you know, going into the future with this indemnification type obligation, and that's something, you know, sort of internal to the organization. You know, the number that I had floated a number, again, which I thought was reasonable, but, you know, again, I know Sam can't commit to it, and it was just our proposal out of the box. It does seem possibly a little unfair to sort of bake that number in, and the number I propose is 5 years. You know, the patent statute of limitations in the U.S. is 7 years. There's not a statutory statute of limitations for trademark cases in this country. So, you know, it is 5 years seemed like sort of out of the air, a reasonable period of time to me, but I do kind of get the sense that if we put it into the document, that does make it harder for ICANN to, you know, propose something lower, right? I mean, it does kind of anchor mindset with a particular number that again was just a number that was a first negotiation proposal from us. So I'm not sure exactly what to do. I would, you know, I just turn it over to Sam to hear any thoughts, but that's some additional background for everybody.
Thank you, George. Go ahead, Sam.
Thanks. This is Sam. So, Alyssa, I think you captured my initial statement on this correctly, that I currently don't have the authority to agree to a number. And if we were to pick a number to pull out of the air, either it would be a five-year number that, as George recommended, that could prejudice ICANN, or if we pulled out a lower number, which probably wouldn't be substantially lower, but a lower number that could prejudice the IATF trust and their negotiation stance too. I think that this is one of those areas where it is, we're not very far apart, but including a number in here before we've agreed on what we agreed that a reasonable number is could prejudice either one of us in terms of the IATF trust or ICANN in this situation. So this would be one that, you know, unless I have the ability to to get a collective decision on this today from those who can actually bind the company in that way, which just in terms of meeting schedules and things today, I don't have the confidence I can do that. I would recommend that this does go out in bracket with a note that a term is under discussion between ICANN and IETF, and that we will try to update within the public comment period, you know, submit an update to the comment form that just provides information on the agreed term, and then we'd strive to do that very early on in the comment period.
Okay. So we have suggestions for putting the two numbers in. I actually think that it's like even invites even more sort of navel gazing among you know, people who have no skin in this game. So my preference would be if we can't put one unbracketed number, that we have a blank and a footnote. But if people feel strongly that they want to put the goalposts in, then you should put yourself in the queue. Okay. I see a lot of people typing, so. Sorry, I'm supporting the footnote. I'm just reviewing the chat. Okay, so why don't we go ahead with, you're just saying what George said. Okay, so N years footnote that explains that the parties are under discussion about what N shall be. Any objections to that? Okay.
Again, just format-wise, maybe no footnote, but maybe we just put this in the text. I mean, I'm just thinking about what will draw less attention to this for the less attentive public, member of the public.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're putting the documents out for public comment. There's a ton of things in here that I think since there are agreements between two very specific parties, we're going to have an interesting time accommodating the public comments, depending on what they are anyway, because there's, you know, things that parties can't agree to. So there's only so much you can do about drawing people's attention one place or the other. But we will, do what you think is best, George. I think you have a sense of where the group is, and Sam. So. Other items for discussion on this document. We have maybe about 5 minutes left for this, and then we need to move on to the solicitation note. I'm assuming the hands up are old hands, George and Sam. So I had one sort of just editorial thing, which is as we move to the solicitation note. So the other two agreements are now called IANA IPR Community Agreement and IANA IPR License Agreement. This one has intellectual property spelled out in the title, and I just wanted to check that we didn't want to make those consistent using the acronym rather than the spelled out intellectual property.
Consistent is good with me.
Okay, so the title of this one will change to IANA IPR Assignment Agreement.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Okay, good, because that needs to go onto the website. Okay, so seeing no further hands, I think we are concluded on the three agreements. So with the community agreement, we had said we would give people some time to just look at Greg's edits, and there's a bunch of action items, obviously, from today as far as finalizing these documents. If we give people 1 hour after the conclusion of this call to look at Greg's edits and respond and really provide any other editorial sort of suggestions to George and Sam and Josh, is anybody objecting to one hour after this call to do final editorial reviews? Okay. So we will say that by 17 UTC, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, all comments will have been sent to the IANA IPR list, and the combination of those and the action items from this call, the legal team will produce clean copies of all of these agreements and send them out to the list, and we will use those as the basis for public comment. Andrew, go ahead.
Thanks. What time, I guess this is really a question for the lawyers, what time do you think I can expect documents? And the reason that is an important thing is because I need to be standing by ready the moment I get them in my hot little hands, because I have to pass them to Steve's, because they need to vote on this tomorrow in order for the public comment to happen.
So we have set a cutoff time of, what did you say, it was at 3 o'clock Eastern
yes.
for comments to come in?
That's correct.
Okay, so that this is working backwards. 3 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock where I am sitting at the moment. I would like to send whatever I do to Josh and Sam just for a final confirmation before sending it out more broadly, because we've been working very well in that mode. And so if the final cutoff is 3, then, you know, by, say, 4, because I'll get started during that period, I should be able to have the documents to Josh and Sam by 4 o'clock Eastern.
So if I assume 5 o'clock Eastern time, are all of Sam and Josh and George okay with that?
Again, assuming that nobody comes back with pages of text that they want to add, yes.
Okay, that's helpful.
Josh and Sam, does this seem reasonable to you for your time commitment today?
Yes, this is Sam. It does. I just wanted to flag, we did identify that we wanted to try to get more information for the top-level domains and the subdomains. I'm confirming those, and we'll get information over to you guys as quickly as possible on those. If we don't have the subdomain text, if you want to just, George, if you want to just draft the exhibit where it would be dropped in and say subdomains to be referenced later or something, do that.
Yes.
But I think we'll confirm before that close time the list of top-level domains, so there's no question on that.
Great.
Josh? Josh, this is okay with you? The whole plan?
Yes, and just to be clear, because I think Jonathan had a drop off, that CWG has to do sort of the same thing tomorrow. You know, we want to get this and get it out and circulate it to the group, and then there's a call tomorrow at 7 Pacific to, you know, make sure there's consensus on the final forms from CWG for them to go out for public comment.
Right. So, Greg, will you circulate the clean copies to the CWG? I know that Jonathan had to drop, so.
Yeah, Greg or I will, one of us.
Yes, I'm happy to do
okay.
So, or have Josh, although I'm not sure he has posting rights to the full CWG list, but we'll
that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so it'll be me, plus it'll always good to get a response, a love note back from Toulouse when I send these things out.
Okay, and if I'm assuming that a few folks will probably join the CWG call, but if one of you or Jonathan can just send a note to the INIPR list at the conclusion of the call to indicate what happened on the call, I think that would be helpful. And the same thing for the trust.
Absolutely. I'll commit Jonathan to doing it.
Thanks. Okay. Did you have something else, Josh? No. Okay. So let's look at the solicitation notes quickly. So I had actually circulated a more updated version from this version. So I think people have seen it in their email. So, but actually I circulated the updated version just before this call, so maybe they haven't seen it in their email. Basically, the only changes that I made were to align the document titles. Since there's only three documents, I wasn't clear on whether there was going to be three licenses or not. And to explain that little, I just took the header text that's in the license agreement that explains that it's the form that will be used to generate three licenses, and then included that in the explanation of the solicitation for public comment. Okay, thank you. So this is essentially the text that we would post onto a dedicated page on the ICG site. There will also be a sort of news item on the homepage of the ICG site. It's WordPress, so familiar format. And when it does get posted, we will send the link to the INIPR list so that actually we can send people the we can circulate the URL in advance if people would like. I can circulate that off list in advance so that people can prepare their own announcements to their own communities. Go ahead, Sam.
Hi, I just wanted to confirm that there's no objection, and I believe I've seen reference to this in some of the emails, but there's no objection to each of the communities as well as ICANN, making sure that there's clear reference of the public comment on their own site, so ICANN would likely put out an announcement stating that it's been part of the discussions and here's the link to the public comment. Please go there. Are there any objections to that happening? We think it's important from ICANN's side to make sure that we're transparent about that since we're one of the parties to the agreement.
This is Greg.
I
was
that I know.
That.
I think
yeah.
That's encouraged, actually. Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Okay. Then I think, is there anything else on the call for public comment? we will, you know, we will wait for the trust call essentially to conclude tomorrow, and then give the secretariat the go ahead, and then we'll let people know that it's live. So you can announce it. The ICG, we will not be announcing anything through the ICG channels, since it's not really ICG work, it's just sitting on the website. Greg, go ahead.
This is monumentally insignificant, but in number one, if we're changing the name of the assignment agreement on the agreement, we might as well change it to the IANA IPR assignment agreement in this text as well.
Yes, I will do that. And we'll also, you know, make sure that the file names that get posted are adjusted so that it's obvious which file belongs to which. So we had a couple of items that from the last call that were not immediate for this week, but that require some further discussion, I think. And the ones that I had were around the CCG operating procedures and the timing of getting the CCG members appointed. So yep, go ahead, George.
Before we move, sorry, I had a hand for the document, the public comment document.
Yep, go ahead.
Which is also relatively insignificant, but should we in here make the mention that if there are bracketed terms in the agreement, you know, they will be, you know, worked out by the relevant parties prior to signing, or it seems like having that legend be in every document is more obtrusive than having it be maybe here in this cover note.
Well, I thought we had that one bracket, and we had concluded that we're going to convert it into a footnote or a note in the text. So I would prefer,
okay,
actually, if there's only one or two documents where there are brackets or zero, that we not that we either, you know, reserve it to those documents or not say anything if we've actually managed to get rid of all the brackets.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That was all I had.
Okay. So my thinking was that we would doodle for a call next week to pick up these couple of items that we have outstanding. Maybe we'll even have the indemnification number ready by that point, which I don't know if we need to discuss it, but the two that I had were around the CCG operating procedures and whether we need to start processes to get people appointed or what the timing is like on that. So any objections to doodling for a call next week? Sam, is that a new hand?
Sorry, it's old.
Okay. Okay, so if the secretariat could take an action to doodle for a one-hour call next week, that would be great. Any other business? Okay, well, I think I just want to say a huge thanks to everybody for working so hard on this in a very short period of time. I think we made incredible strides in a very small number of days, and we should all be proud of that, and, you know, looking forward to getting the public comments and actually finalizing and signing documents in September. And with that, I think we're done.
Thank you again, Alyssa, for chairing. Thank you all.